What's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. It is the Jim Rome Show. It is live. It is in Southern California. It's great to be with you. Lots of show for you. Your telephone number is toll free. 1-800-636-8686. You want to hit me up right now. I do have three interviews, and they do start in the very next segment, but never too soon to get through. In fact, better sooner than later. Call now, 1-800-636-8686. There is so much going on, so many good things to cover, and some not-so-good things to cover. Hit me up. Also, follow me on Twitter, at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at HaveAtake.com. All right, so the show sets up like this. Lots of different things to do today, including a conversation with the head football coach at Notre Dame. That's Brian Kelly. That's coming up in about 20 minutes. Coming up next hour, we'll talk some Major League Baseball with a starting pitcher for the Minnesota Twins, Jake Odorizzi. Get his thoughts on the ALCS, the NLCS. We'll talk about his team. That's coming up the top of hour number two. Also in the second hour, the head football coach at Missouri, Eli Drinkwitz. So that's how this show looks. You've got your telephone number. Go ahead and use it. Manning the phones, none other than Hawk. Wah! The bird. Adam Hawk. EP. Screening out your telephone calls. It's Tuesday, so Alvin DeLauro is to my left. The old man. Birthday Eve, old man. Are you going to make it to another birthday? Mr. President. Hang in there, 24 more hours, and you survive another year. 1-800-636-8686. All right, let me start with this. Sunday night was a great night here in SoCal. A great night for SoCal sports fans, right? We'd all agree. You might be here to hate, but you got to admit, we had a great night on Sunday. Great night Sunday night. Now, Monday night, yeah, not so much. In fact, if I'm being transparent and honest, Monday was pretty horrible. Because for a long time, it looked like it was going to be a really good night. It looked like the Chargers and the Dodgers were both going to follow up the Lakers with big wins of their own. Then it all went to hell for both. Why don't we start with the LA Chargers? Last night's game in prime time against the Saints felt like a coming out party. Another coming out party for Justin Herbert. I mean, if for some reason you did not know why the Chargers made the rookie their starter, you do now. He went 20 of 34, 264 yards, four touchdowns. The rookie had four TDs on a Monday night. He staked his team to a 17-point lead over an alleged contender. And the guy looked good doing it. He looked great. A nine-play, 80-yard TD drive on the team's first possession. The only slight blemish on that drive was the fact that LA missed a point after. But it's a long game. They went right down the field on these guys. That was never going to matter, right? In the first half, LA was dominating, and the Saints were playing, well, they were playing not just bad football, but football that was not smart. In fact, I'd go as far as to say the Saints were playing dumb football. Bad penalties, bad throws, blown coverages, an all-pro missing a big game because he allegedly punched a teammate. I mean, dumb. Ugly. Bad. About as ugly as that idiotic roughing the punter penalty that let the Chargers keep the ball on their second TD drive. I mean, the Saints look like hell in the first half. Then you had this INT from Drew Brees.
You're on 22. Brees steps and throws and it's intercepted. It is picked off. Nasir Adderley down to the 15, the 10, and will just come up short.
Drew Brees, he's trying to fit this ball into the tight end, but the ball floats and goes back. That's just a force by Drew Brees. You get frustrated. The offense isn't in sync off the bat, and you force it as an interception.
Man, that was ugly. Really ugly. The Saints offense is really pretty strange right now. And that's putting it nicely because it's not what it's been. That offense is not nearly what it's been. And sure, part of that is Michael Thomas not being on the field due to injury and punching a teammate in the head, reportedly. I mean, I'm going to argue he's their best player. You lose that and you're not going to be the same. That's a given. But just getting this guy back does not mean they're going to return to what they've always been offensively. Namely, that explosive unit that keeps opposing D coordinators up at night. Because they're no longer that. They're still dangerous. They're still effective. They still have weapons. But they're not that high-octane unit that they used to be. Playing the Saints offense used to be one of the scariest things in football because you knew they were going to test you every single way possible. They were going to hit you deep. They were going to gash you on the ground. You just hoped that you didn't get run out of their gym and straight humiliated. But again, that's no longer the case. And if you're on Twitter during the game, you're seeing two names pop up constantly, Alvin Kamara and Taysom Hill. As in, keep feeding one guy and stop feeding the other guy. So, following the Breeze INT, the Chargers were up 17. Being up 17 on the road against a future Hall of Fame quarterback is nothing new for Herbert or the Chargers. I mean, they were up 17 last week in Tampa against Tom Brady. But then it fell apart in the last 32 minutes. Last night, though, man, last night was different. Last night felt like a step in the right direction. Last night felt like a step forward. You know, go on the road in prime time with your rookie quarterback who's getting better every single day, and you make a statement. The statement being, we are different. We are growing. The worst is behind us. We are going to finish games right here, right now. It is our time. It all stops now. Oh, excuse me. My bad. Because they're still not ready for prime time.
My bad, my friend.
Still not capable of finishing a game, my friends. My bad. Because it all fell apart again. The Saints score before halftime. They make it 20-10, Chargers. But then the Chargers seem like they decided, you know, we'll just nap it out in the second half. They gave up a field goal on the Saints' second drive of the second half, and then this on the third drive.
Back to pass goes Breeze. He's in Charger territory, moves up, launches a long pass. He's got a receiver at the 10, the 5. It's caught by the tight end, Cook, and it's a touchdown. It's a touchdown. Drew Breeze has just thrown a 41-yard touchdown pass.
You know those golden pipes belong to Kevin Harlan and Westwood One. Now it's tied at 20, and the feeling on the sideline had to be, oh, hell no. Here we go again. Uh-oh! I don't know, except maybe with that young slinger under center, maybe things are different. And then, with less than 4 minutes to go in the fourth, they've got a 3rd and 10 from their own 36. They're staring at a 3-and-out and handing the ball back to the Saints to take the lead. Except Herbert did this.
Shotgun snap, drops back 5, got the block from the right tackle, throws long down the sideline. Oh, he's got his receiver, Williams, down the sideline, 20, 10, 5, he'll walk in, touchdown, touchdown! A 64-yard touchdown to a wide-open Mike Williams of the Chargers.
Wow, two huge mistakes right here. First, they only rushed 3 guys, so they dropped 8 into coverage, and Robinson was the right corner over there, and he just let Mike Williams run right past him as if he was expecting safety help. Where were you?
It's correct, my guy, Kevin Harlan, but correction, not wide open, wide ass open. That was maybe the easiest touchdown Herbert is going to have in his entire NFL career. Like, I've got no idea what Patrick Robinson and the Saints was doing on that play. I said it earlier, I'll say it again right now. That is just not smart football. You can't leave a guy that wide open on 3rd and 10. You can't leave somebody that wide open on any down and distance. I mean, I thought for sure Robinson must have fell down. The guy certainly must have been injured. That's the only way a guy gets that open in the NFL. That wasn't the case. That was just another mental breakdown in coverage. So now the Saints are down 7 with 3:44 on the clock. They need to go 73 yards to tie that game. And sure enough, they do. Because Charger fan, I hate to say it, you knew they would. You knew they would, just as you knew they would cap it off with something like this.
Taysom Hill is in the gun. He brings his receiver in motion. He fakes the handoff. He runs to the near side. He pump fakes. He runs from the 10 to the 5. He's in for the touchdown. Taysom Hill runs it in. A touchdown by Taysom Hill running over the right tackle.
And that was for everybody on Twitter crying about Taysom Hill being wedged into the offense too often. So, L.A. gets the ball back. They've got 52 seconds to get in field goal range. And I'll be damned, but the kid does it. and he does it with this perfect pass to Mike Williams.
Third and one from the 39. Shotgun snap, the drop back of five, the time by the line. Throws long down the near side, leaping attempt to catch. It's caught! It's caught in a leap on the near side at the 31-yard line by Williams. He caught the ball in 8 seconds to go, losing his helmet in front of the Saints bench on the near sideline in what was an acrobatic, leaping, two-handed, backpedaling, falling down catch.
I'm telling you, into double coverage to a spot where only the receiver could get it. A hell of a throwing catch. One hell of a throwing catch. And remember that rap on Herbert coming out, that maybe the guy was too mellow, maybe he was too laid back, maybe he was too quiet to be an NFL quarterback. You know, all that crap. Remember all that junk? Yeah, I don't think that's the case, because this guy is built for it. In big moments like that, as a rookie, he is stepping right into it, making the right play, a big play, giving his team a chance to win. Now it's down to the money badger for a 50-yarder to win the game.
The snap is good. The ball put down. The right-footed kick is away. It is end over end. It hits the upright. No good. He hit the upright. It's no good.
Oh, my goodness. I thought it was just going to hook back inside the pole. Wow.
Doink! That is the sound of Charger fan being stabbed in the heart yet again. And not like Tyrod Taylor getting stabbed in the lung with a needle. That is the sound of Charger fan getting stabbed in the heart yet again. I mean, there was plenty of leg. The money badger just was not money in that case. Plenty of leg, not enough accuracy, and of course, you couple that with missing the extra point earlier, and you've got a nightmare game for the kicker. And at that point, Charger fan knew how this was going to go. You knew it. You've lived it. You do live it. The Saints were going to go down and kick a field goal in overtime, which they did. And then the Chargers were going to make it as close as they possibly could to winning without actually winning, which is what they did, because it's what they always do.
Here they come, back to pass. He throws a line drive pass, leaping two and catch by Williams right at midfield on the fluted away. At midfield, he's close to the first down. I don't know that he's got it. Let's see where they spot the ball. The Saints have emptied their bench. They think they have stopped him, and they have. They put it down short. Fourth and seven pass, brilliant catch by Williams, but short by the length of a football. He did not get to midfield, and Drew Brees and the Saints have come from behind to beat the Chargers in overtime, 30-27.
Alvin, can I get one more? Aww. Because that was a huge play by Marshawn Lattimore. That is one massive dude that he took down with the game on the line. You expect Williams to win that battle every single time. But not last night. Yeah, I know, Charger fan. You were not expecting him to win that battle on that play, because that would have meant that you were going to win the game. And you do not win games like this. And I hate to say it, but you are right. The last 2 years, the Chargers have lost 13 games by one score. 13. And when I say the last 2 years, I'm talking about 16 games last year and only 5 games this year. So we're not talking about 2 full years. They somehow have lost 13 of those games by a single score. How does that happen? How is that even mathematically possible? They had 9 one-score losses last season. And then you think, it can't get any worse. It can't get any more devastating. It can't get any more heartbreaking than that. Oh, yes, it can. Because they've already lost 4 straight one-score games this year. You couple that with the trend of awful injuries, and the Chargers seem like they might be cursed. Except I don't believe in curses. Never have. They're not cursed. Man, they are this close. This close to being a good team. This close to being even a really good team. They just need to break through. Maybe even just once. Maybe you find a way to win even one of these games. You find a way to finish even one of these games. And then everything changes. Maybe. But we'll never know until they do it, and they haven't. And the problem is, they're getting worse, not better. Now, the good news is, it can all change in a hurry. But only if they learn to finish. And it's something they better learn stat, because it's getting late in a hurry. And I'm really not sure how much more of this the Charger fan can take. Especially L.A. Charger fan. Inglewood! Burbank! Long Beach! Pasadena! Hancock Park! Woodland Hills! Studio City! Alhambra, Marina Del Rey, Van Nuys, North Hollywood. I want to hear from you. How much more of this imbecility and aggravation can one man take? Dan Fouts ain't walking through that door, Charger fan, and neither am I. Hell, I can barely walk at all. I want to hear from you. Why can't they finish? Is it this, what do they call it? Epidemic? Or is it a pandemic? Whatever. San Diego, do you want them back? React to me. I don't have much time left. On the planet, I mean. Sing it with me. San Diego. Hey. Remember that Super Bowl run back in whenever that year was? Best time of my life, man. The Bolts were good. I was the play-by-play voice. I got to watch Rome work his magic every day. Sing it with me, everybody. San Diego. John Carney would have split the freaking uprights. Stan Humphries ain't walking through that door. Neither is John Freeze. Give the rock to Natron Means, for crying out loud. Touchdown, Tony Martin would have taken matters into his own hands. You know it, and so do I. And now so does the entire San Fernando Valley. Wow. This ticker can't take much more of this. Man, I'm pissed. I mean, seriously, how many games with one Los Angeles Superchargers? Oh. I'm already hung up on that. I got to get out. I've got Brian Kelly coming up next. Notre Dame head football coach will be my guest. Stay tuned. I've got one question for y'all. Why is Old Trapper beef jerky so good? There is something to be said for a family business that stands by quality and produces the world's finest beef jerky. Do not be fooled by other brands. All beef jerky is not one and the same. Make sure you choose Old Trapper. You can actually see the quality through their iconic Clearview packages. Every single bite of Old Trapper is tender. It's never tough because they use only the very best ingredients, from their lean strips of beef seasoned with top quality spices to their real wood-fired smoke. Old Trapper delivers quality in every single bite. And Old Trapper jerky comes in four mouth-watering flavors. You get old-fashioned with a hint of brown sugar sweetness. You get teriyaki. You get peppered, and if you need a little more zing, there is hot and spicy. All chock full of good protein to satisfy your manliest hunger cravings and to provide real, sustained energy. Old Trapper is a better way to snack. Make Old Trapper part of your weekly grocery list and keep a good supply on hand for you and your family. If you do not see it, be sure to ask for Old Trapper by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef?
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. Busy Tuesday. Good Tuesday. I'm Jim Rome. As promised, we are joined right now by the head football coach at Notre Dame. He is the winningest active coach in FBS. He is a three-time Home Depot Coach of the Year Award winner, only coach to have won it more than once, has led Notre Dame to 10 wins or more in four of the last five seasons. Notre Dame is 3-0 on the year. They're number four in both polls. They are hosting Louisville on Saturday. Brian Kelly is my guest. Brian, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to have you on. So you're coming off that 16-point win over Florida State on Saturday night. That was your first game since September 19th. Let me start right there. Going into the game, what kind of expectations did you have, and did you have concerns about how the time off might impact the team?
Yeah, I think the expectations were that, you know, we were going to have some moments of adversity and that we, you know, were built to overcome them. So, you know, just, you know, there are a couple of instances. You know, the first series, Kyren Williams fumbles the football, and, you know, our defense, you know, holds them to three. But the next series, Kyren comes off and rips off a 65-yard run. So, you know, knowing going in that there were going to be some hiccups and hanging in there with our guys and showing confidence in them, I think that was the most important thing, that we trusted them. We had some time off. We were going to have some mistakes. We weren't going to be perfect, but hang in there, and we'll get this thing you know, back to where it needs to be after we get some plays under our belt.
Notre Dame head football coach Brian Kelly, my guest. You mentioned Kyren Williams. He and Chris Tyree had enormous games. They both had 100-yard games. In fact, Brian, the offense rushed for 354 yards. Like, when you've got the kind of experience that you seem to have on the offensive line, and then you add a couple of tight ends who really enjoy blocking, does it feel like that level of physicality is at the core of this group's identity overall?
Yeah, and that's what we wanted to go into the season is try to, you know, shape who you are. And, you know, to have these five guys back, obviously, is who we are. And they played a lot of football. You know, they played in the you know, the BCS playoffs 2 years ago. They won 11 games last year together. So this group of five players is, you know, as good as I've coached as a unit. So let's lean on them and create our identity with this group. And so far, it is who we are. And add some depth at the tight end position and two outstanding running backs and actually a third that rushed for over 100 yards in Cebu Flemingster. So, you know, it's really a deep group that we can count on week in and week out.
We're talking to Brian Kelly. And then on top of that, you throw in wide receiver Javon McKinley, who had five receptions for 107 yards. Afterwards, you made the point, quote, he's a beast. He just needs to think that way more often. I think he's starting to think that way, end of quote. So, like, you're chuckling about that. But as a coach, how do you go about helping a player realize the kind of upside and potential he has? And how much of that is just about a mindset for that player?
Well, that's what I'm trying to create. You're absolutely right, is that he has to come in with that mindset. You know, we believe in him, but he's got to believe in himself. And, you know, he's such a great kid, and I want him to be a great kid off the field. But on the field, I want him to have that mentality that he can't be stopped. He was going up against a really good corner in Asante Samuel Jr. He's going to play on Sunday. He's a really good player. And he can go up there and he can win those battles against a player of that caliber. He needs to start thinking in those terms. And so, you know, part of our job is to get those kids to understand that they're gifted. He's a kid out of California, surveyed high school. He had an incredible high school career, and he's been slow to getting to that level here. And some of it's just a matter of carrying that mindset, and I think he's doing that now.
We're talking to Notre Dame head coach Brian Kelly. You know, Brian, I've spoken to a number of head coaches for the past month and a half, and almost to a man, they've talked about how emotional they were after the first game of the season because of all the work that everybody had to put in just to get to that point, but also all the uncertainty that they dealt with in terms of not knowing if there'd even be a season. What was the experience like for you overall, and what have you learned from it?
Oh man! Well, we had two seasons, really. You
right.
know, we started the season and then we shut it down and didn't play. And so, you know, I just think that, you know, the ability to have emotional flexibility is more important than anything else. In other words, that things are going to happen and you've got to be able to adjust emotionally more than anything else, because the protocols and procedures and you know, the new normals, if you will, you have to have emotional stability, because if not, you're going to be out of sorts. And I think that's what it teaches you more than anything else, is that, you know, you have to really calm yourself down and really look at, we're dealing with playing football during a pandemic, and some of these things are out of your control. And I think once you do that, I think you have a better sense of what you're doing every day.
We are talking to Brian Kelly for a few more moments. Well said. So initially, you were getting ready for a schedule which included facing Navy in Ireland, Wisconsin at Lambeau, USC in Los Angeles, and so much more. Then the schedule changes a lot due to COVID. And then you joined the ACC for a year. So what's that part of the process been like, and are you embracing conference membership for the year?
Yeah, I mean, we are. I mean, we're very fortunate and very humbled that the ACC has given us this opportunity to be part of, you know, full-fledged membership, if you will. You know, all of our other sports, obviously, are full members of the ACC, so we've had this collateral relationship with them. But, you know, to be able to play for an ACC championship, to be able to, you know, fulfill our schedule, the ACC, you know, has made us whole from that standpoint, and certainly we're very grateful. But it's been different, you know, because you're now in a situation where, you know, you have an opponent each week that you've got a better feel for. When you're an independent, there are different schools that you're playing for the first time. And so there's a little bit more of a comfort level in understanding who you're playing each and every week. And so our guys, I think, you know, understand that the opponent is someone that they're much more familiar with from week to week.
Brian Kelly, my guest, and then one of your former players, Chase Claypool, had an enormous game on Sunday for the Steelers. He had 7 receptions, 110 yards. He had 4 total touchdowns. Having coached him, are you at all surprised by the way he has shown up on the next level? And how much pride is there then when you see players have huge games on Sundays?
Yeah, there's a lot of pride. I mean, we've got 10 guys that made NFL rosters from this team from last year, and nobody really talks about it. But, you know, we're proud of the development of our players. You know, nobody knew who Chase Claypool was, and, you know, all the other guys that, you know, have got bigger resumes. He's a young man out of Canada that, you know, that developed, and we thought that he was going to make an impact. And, you know, he's a humble kid, and he has, you know, obviously made an impact early on, and he'll continue to do that. He's a matchup nightmare. You can play him inside, you can play him outside, you can hand him off the football, and he's well-grounded, and he's well-prepared for the success that he's going to get in the NFL.
So, Brian, before I let you go, one quick thought on your staff. You've got Mike Mickens, who played for you at Cincinnati. He joined the staff in the offseason. You've got Tommy Rees, who played for you at Notre Dame and was promoted to offensive coordinator this offseason. What do you make of the job that they've both done, and what's it like to have former players on staff?
Well, they're just, you know, first of all, unique in that they have such a great knowledge of the game, but also incredible interpersonal skills, the ability to teach, communicate, relate. That's what today is all about when it comes to coaching in any sport. Their ability to relate with their players, and they do such a great job of relating with their players and interacting with, obviously, the staff as well. So to have Mike on staff with the corners, he's doing a terrific job with a bunch of freshman corners, and Tommy Rees is doing a great job in the leadership role that he's in. So very blessed that I've been in this game long enough that I've got players now that are able to be part of the staff.
Notre Dame, 3-0 on the year. They are number 4 in both polls, and they're at home against Louisville on Saturday. That is a 2:30 p.m. Eastern start. Brian Kelly, of course, the head coach there. Brian, great to have you back. Always good to talk Notre Dame football with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me on. Take care.
You too, Brian. Good to talk to you. Appreciate that. Appreciate that relationship. Brian Kelly coming in. They are 3-0, and again, they are number 4 in both polls. 1-800-636-8686. Good to see the phone lines lighten up. What do you want to hit? This is how this goes, right? If you want to react to something I said, do it. If you agree with me, great. If you don't, better. If you want to hit on a different topic altogether, don't wait on me. I may or may not get to what you want to talk about. So, man, set the agenda. Just get up in here. Make sure you have a take. Come strong. I've got Jake Odorizzi coming up at the top of hour number 2. He's a starting pitcher for the Minnesota Twins. He'll break down what he's seen so far in the postseason. That's 10 o'clock straight up Pacific time. Eli Drinkwitz, the head football coach at Missouri, is back in. We'll have that in hour number 2. Third hour is wide open. I want to get to the NLCS. I want to get to the ALCS. I've got thoughts on the Tuesday night matchup. Yes, we have a Tuesday night matchup. And Twitter was abuzz about all the dumb things last night. That's what Twitter is. People reacting to dumb things. Also, some breaking news, and it's not good for the Dodgers. John Morosi's got this. Tony Gonsolin is going to start game 2 of the NLCS. The Dodgers say that Clayton Kershaw, quote, has been scratched with back spasms. There is a phrase to describe something like that. Hey, man, I said it before that series that the Braves were no joke. You don't want to sleep on these guys. They are dangerous. They are unbeaten in the postseason. They win game 1 against the Dodgers ace. And then all of a sudden, the Dodgers are like in a must-win situation, if you ask me, in game 2, because they've got their other ace going, except their other ace is not going. So now Tony Gonsolin moves up. So that just in. All right. We will take a short time out. More on that when we come back. You're in the jungle. Time for a bottom of the...
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Saturday's big day. Because the SEC on CBS is in prime time for one of the biggest games of the year, and I would argue it is the biggest game of the year. Number 3, Georgia, going to Tuscaloosa to take on number 2, Alabama. Coverage gets underway at 7 Eastern with the Drive to Atlanta presented by Mercedes-Benz. Followed by State Farm College Football Today, leading up to kickoff at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. Saturday night, the SEC on CBS. I know better than to feed the trolls. I do. Because you are what you eat. So you trolls are crap. I know better than to do this. I'm just going to give you a quick sampling just to show you that this is where so many of you live. Now, when I say so many of you, I mean only a few, the minority. Most of the world does not think this way. Anybody who knows anything about baseball does not think this way. But I'm asking some of you to look in the mirror. Not that it would help. Because, unfortunately, when some of you do look in the mirror, you actually like what you see. But when I see a sampling of reaction to that Clayton Kershaw story, and I know it's coming already. This is what I mean by, generally, I don't want to feed you trolls. I'm not about that, because to me, it's just lazy. It's bad radio. It's bad content. It's a bad show. I'm not doing my job if I just sit here and I feed you trolls and I let you win. But I do want to acknowledge it. I don't want you to think that I don't see it, because I see everything. I just don't react to everything. But I mentioned that Clayton Kershaw's got back spasms. He will not go in game 2. If you know anything about Clayton Kershaw, you know he's in a bad way if he's not taking the ball in a must-win situation. And I would even say that. Game 2, to me, is a must-win given who they're playing against and the fact that Atlanta already won game 1 against the Dodgers ace. So, I don't want to feed the trolls, but I'll go ahead and I'll feed you knuckleheads for a moment or so just to acknowledge this. And the reason I'm acknowledging it is so you know that I know what you're saying. As an example, Chad Jarmingo tweets, Kershaw dodging the Braves lineup to avoid further adding to his playoff failures. So smart. Vet move. Yeah, because that's what Clayton Kershaw did. He thought to himself, man, a lot of heat. A lot of heat here. The last thing that I need is another loss on my resume. Yep, I don't want the ball. My back hurts. I think I'm spasming. I mean, is that what you're saying? Hoodie Geo tweets, smart move by the Dodgers to not have a Clayton Chokeshaw on the mound. Oh, so the Dodgers shut him down. All right, so one vote for it being a smart vet move by Kershaw. Another vote for the Dodgers taking matters into their own hands and taking the ball away. Yeah, because that's what happened. The Dodgers have not only 2 aces, but I could even argue legitimately 2 starters, 2 really good starters. So you know what we do? We lose the first game, and let's make sure we rip the ball from the other guy. Eric Yang tweets, cop out. Honestly, mediocre pitcher feasting on weak competition in the regular season to get his stats up. Look at his combined playoff and all-star game record. All right, listen. If you want to argue that the guy's not back, that while Velo is up, he's not the guy that he once was. He'll never be that guy. And by the way, he's not back. We can have that conversation. Just not the conversation about how he begged out of the start. Or the conversation about how the team took the ball from him. Daniel tweets, Romy, are back spasms code for can't handle the pressure? No, Danny. Back spasms are code for back spasms. He's 2-0 in the postseason. And you can talk all you want about who he beat. He's 2-0 in the postseason. Man, how do you question this guy's heart or his grit? We can question whether or not he's been the same postseason pitcher. He hasn't. We know this. we can discuss why that is, how much of that is on him and how much of it is not on him. But how do you question this guy's character, his grit, or his heart? Man, you can't. Not if you want to be credible. Not if you have any idea what the hell you're talking about. Joe DiBella tweets, death, taxes, and Kershaw not doing good things in October. Sketchy 72. Kershaw didn't want that brave smoke. Trust me, he did. The guy wanted the smoke. He wanted the ball. He wanted the opportunity. He wanted to be the guy to do what aces do, what Hall of Famers do. Stop the bleeding. Get you back on track. He's obviously not right physically. Back spasms. Is that what's that code for, Rome? It's code for back spasms. Steve Mack tweets, I had back spasms. Then I pitched three complete games of slow pitch softball in one day. Wuss. Great example, softball guy. Great example, softball guy. It's like one and the same. Pitching in the NLCS with back spasms literally is the same exact thing as you pitching slow pitch softball. Not only that, but three complete games of slow pitch softball. My man, what, five inning games from 40 feet, 4 inches, underhand? It's the epitome of softball guy right there. 1-800-636-8686. Yeah, like I said, now you trolls are fat and happy. You're in your post-meal lean because I fed you. Go take a nap now. Nap it out. That was Thanksgiving dinner for you trolls. Now, if you want to talk about where that leaves LA, they're down one game already, and then they do not get their other ace. So where does that leave them? I'll tell you what. They better get it going offensively. They better swing their bats, because that's not what happened last night.
Swing the bat, puss.
Well, there's that. Or actually, swing the bat less early in the count. Normally, that's a really patient team, and they were not last night. Atlanta will do that to you. Strong team. NLCS. You've got Atlanta, you've got LA, you got a couple of teams who were undefeated in the postseason going into last night. Something had to give. Somebody was going to lose. Well, I interrupt that thought for the all-important reaction from Drew in West LA. Drew in West LA tweets, forget Kershaw. Dave Roberts should walk up to the chair and take the scissors away from Chris Berman's barber. Berman had to be thinking to himself, good, man. Good. Kershaw pulled out of that start, allegedly. At least that's what Twitter will think, and I'll be off the hook. Yeah, no, apparently not. You ever notice, like, if I'm not tweeting about that type of thing, wouldn't it stand to reason that I'm not going to talk about that thing on my program? Like, I understand the platforms are different. Romy, I thought Chris Berman's hair looked great. Regards, bald dudes with ponytails. Ashley in Nebraska. War Lady Clones.
War Lady Clones.
Man, I cannot delete them as quickly as they're coming in. Rome Slice, you just messed up big time, fat man. Regards, the suits at ESPN when Chris Berman walked into the studio with that perm. Geoff and Lincoln.
You just messed up big time, fat man!
All right, so you know two things about me and the show, right? Personal appearance, still not show fodder. Me talking about other media personalities and what they do, still not show fodder. So why are you talking about, quote, a fat man with yellow hair? Or a fat man with a perm? Why are you doing that? You know I don't talk about either one of those things. Yeah, I know. Hey, Rome, you see Chris Berman last night? He said, thank God for Clayton Kershaw's back. There, I did it for you, idiots. Can I have my show back?
Give me back my show.
One for three, C1 tweets. What a great comeback from the Saints last night. Signed at Chris Berman's blonde perm. God. Like, that's all you have to take from that game last night. The Chargers blow a 17-point lead. Herbert looked awesome. The Saints do not look like they should look. They don't look like the Saints. Man, they were playing some really dumb football early on. They looked anything but like a Super Bowl contender. But that's the only reaction I get from that game. Chris Berman and his perm? Jimmo's. Have you caught Chris Berman's look this season? It looks like dude discovered the fountain of aging. Garrett Ritt and Ed Reed cannot believe how old Berman looks. Thanks, Drew in West LA. Hey, Drew, how many different tweets do you want to send on that topic? You've made your point. And as always, Drew, it's not a good point. Keep Ritt and his name out your mouth. Ritt's going to get really old tomorrow. Ritt and I, strangely and weirdly, share the same birthday. Of course, I was born like 15 years later, and he looks like 20 years older. I can't figure that out. But you know what's even more bizarre than Ritt and I sharing the same birthday? Ritt looking exactly like Dwight Eisenhower. That's weird. But even more weird that Dwight Eisenhower has the same birthday. Like, the hell is going on here? This is all really weird to me. And if I'm not mistaken, my guy Stephen A. Smith has the same birthday. All of us, tomorrow. October 14, yo. Hey, what are we doing, Mr. President? Are we working tomorrow? Damn straight we are. Get here early, man.
Yo.
SA Sports Honk tweets, Bueller, Walker, not in those tight pants. You know there's a whole lot of crap and a whole lot of garbage. If we didn't even get to the tight pants thread yet. Something else really dumb. And I would love to say that when it comes to Twitter, the positives far outweigh the negatives, but they don't. Not anymore. Not if that's the subject matter. Not if that's what we're talking about. Not if the main topics on Twitter are that. Man, you trolls are so fat. I just fed you so much. You happy? You like that? Now go puke it all up. 1-800-636-8686. We're going to talk some actual sports. Is that all right? We're going to talk some actual sports when we come back. Is that all right? Stay tuned.